Enterprise Management 360, your main source for tech news, analysis, podcasts, and videos for the enterprise.
Hello and welcome to this EM360 podcast. My name is Max Curtin, Head of Content here at EM360, and I'm your host on today's podcast. Now, in today's episode, I'm being joined by Payam Fad, who is the CEO and co-founder at Subject 7. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the rise of no-code, low-code in the test automation landscape. So, Payam, welcome to the show, and thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Max. Hello. It is a pleasure to be a guest speaker on today's EM360 event.
Would you mind just letting our listeners know how you got involved in the space and your background on all of this?
Sure. So I've always been on the software development projects, and I've always seen a need for software test automation, regardless of the size of the program that I was involved with, whether it was multi-million dollar all the way to multi-billion dollar projects. But due to the mismatch between the skill set of testers and the type of tools that were in the market, it has always shifted down the priority list. So when I met my technical co-founder a few years ago, and he gave me the idea of what he thought we should be doing, I definitely saw a need for it in the space, and that's how everything got started. Subject 7 is a no-code test automation platform on the cloud. We do have lots of clients on the federal and commercial space, and we have been able to help them to come up to speed with automated testing without the need for them to do any sort of expertise. And they have been able to create as robust and as complex of automated flows as somebody with coding skills can.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, there's a definite need for it. And it's interesting to kind of see that shift and where it's all heading. And that's the perfect kickoff for us starting this conversation today, because I want to begin this podcast by getting really an overview of the test automation landscape and what it really is today. So if you could just walk us through, what is the current state of test automation, and how far has the sector evolved since the inception of the test automation pyramid in Mike Cohn's 2009 book, Succeeding with Agile?
Sure. So there are a wide variety of personas needing to do test automation today that includes business users, end clients, manual testers, software engineers, developers, and others. And there are a lot of test automation products in the market as well. And they are really divided into two categories of products. On one end, we have the open source technologies where they essentially provide you a series of APIs, and then you have to take those APIs and create frameworks on top of them. It works fine, but the problem is that you will have yet another code base to maintain. You will have to deviate your team members from creation and maintenance of the actual application that your project, your company is providing, to creation and maintenance of a test automation framework that you have to maintain throughout the life cycle of your project. And it doesn't quite translate to the bottom line for the project either, but even if it succeeds, it is not quite addressing all of the personas that we mentioned earlier. It's mainly geared towards developers and people who are able to write code. On the flip side, there are a lot of COTS products in the market. These products are trying to repurpose their traditional record and play tools to help with a variety of different personas. However, even though they are able to help them with creation of tests, they are not as useful and helpful in helping them to maintain those tests that are created earlier, to be able to maintain those tests that they have created using these record and play tools. They either have to resort back to development team for maintenance of those tests, or they will have to re-record them every time there is a new release or new sprint in place.
Yeah, I think that's a great overview there, because you've hit on a lot of really important points there of, you know, the gaps in the persona and everything that kind of needs to be done from that perspective. And really the effort that goes into it is quite impressive. So, yeah, I think that's a very fair point to make. And there's one thing I wanted to also mention, because obviously when we're talking about this, and as you just mentioned, there's a lot of factors going into this, and there's a lot of different skills and tools that people need to bring to the table. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, business and IT leaders, there's been concern about the significant skills gap concerning the test automation and the software testing development industry. So can you just tell us a little bit more about that and what that kind of means?
Of course. So basically, the short of it is that developers and or software engineers in this space, they do not like to be involved with anything related to testing. On the flip side, testers in the market do not typically have the proper technical expertise to be able to perform these test automation tasks. So what ends up happening is a lot of projects that I have seen, they will bring on testers. They provide training sessions for 8-12 weeks of teaching them some syntax of an easy to learn programming language. And then after that time period of training, they will let them create those frameworks and maintain those frameworks using the language that they have learned. The problem is, it is not that hard to create your first 10, 20, 50 automated tests using what you have just learned. But to be able to create a framework that can scale as your project scales and your project requirements changes, it will not be as straightforward. And in the long run, those projects will run into issues because those frameworks do not scale. So there is really a gap in the market space for filling these test automation roles.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see where that gap is kind of come from. And as you said, seeing that being filled is the most important step going forward. And I wanted to take that kind of a step further, because obviously, you know, the no-code, low-code discussion that we're going to be having today fits nicely into this, because I was having a read of Perfecto's 2021 State of Test Automation report. And in it was saying, you know, scriptless testing automation, also known as no code, low code, it really is the top trend enterprises are looking to invest in throughout 2021. Can you kind of tell us what is this technique and how is it transforming the test automation space?
So it is becoming more and more critical to employ a true no coding platform for test automation across all industries. This, however, doesn't quite mean just creation of the automated tests. It also, more importantly, refers to maintenance of the tests. More and more test automation vendors are trying to rebrand their automation products to appeal to all sorts of personas to capture a larger market share.
That's interesting that they're kind of bringing that about. Where did this kind of trend begin and how is this going to push forward, basically?
So basically what ends up happening is a lot of business folks or subject matter experts who know the details of the specific program, specific project that they are either implementing for their end client or helping them come up to speed with that application, these guys are more and more becoming the focal point of contact for either user acceptance testing or helping to certify these applications. Given that these guys don't have the technical expertise needed to do the test automation that is needed to certify these systems, these guys have to look for no-code automation tools to be able to, do the job that they are supposed to do and be able to certify those systems based on the specifications that have been set, at the onset of the project. So that's basically where most of these requirements are coming from.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think if we take that a step further and look at kind of some of the other elements that are being affected, is, you know, we're seeing that more and more development professionals, they're using the low-code platforms to get those development projects pushed through quicker and quicker, you know, to make life a lot easier. But a lot of these projects are also employing open source products for the test automation needs. And then they have to create a frameworks or resort to coding. Is this a backwards approach, or what are your thoughts on this?
Yes, very interesting question. So it is true that lots and lots of low-code development tools are being created, and they are gaining momentum in the industry because using those low-code development platform will enable projects and teams to create applications much faster. And also, it will help them to not have to worry about reinventing the wheel every single time there is a new implementation or there is a new project. But on the flip side, testers typically rely on open source products and will end up building frameworks on top of them, meaning they will resort to coding only because that after a couple of years of doing that type of coding, they can get their first software engineering or development job down the road. But at what stake, when they do that and they do all of this development and get a development job, then at that point, they will use these low-code platforms to create the applications much, much faster and do less coding. So with that said, It is sort of backwards. The folks who know software engineering and have done this, from the onset, they are reverting to low code, whereas folks who don't have this expertise are resorting to a lot of coding. So I guess it only makes sense for projects to have their QA teams, their testing teams, either go to low-code or even better, go to no-code test automation platforms to be able to keep up with the amount of code that is being pushed by these low-code platforms on the development front, and then mainly concentrate on what they do best, that being breaking the application and certifying that the application is matching the requirements that were set up front before the project started. It economically makes sense. It is less distraction for the team, and it will translate to the bottom line much, much better for all the projects.
Yeah, I think that's expertly kind of explained there. And when you mentioned the bottom line and return of investments, that always gets our listeners' attention for sure when we're talking about this stuff. Which leads me on nicely, because whenever we have these conversations, we get to this point where we're talking about these implementation and how to make things easier and, you know, how it should be done properly. It would be great to understand, especially from your standpoint, and also I've read a great piece from Subject 7 around this, but what does it take to pivot to no-code, low-code test automation, and how can organizations seamlessly interloop it with their DevOps ecosystem?
So projects that have not yet spent a lot of resources on creation of test automation frameworks can easily make that switch because, you know, not so much technical expertise is needed. They haven't done a whole lot of investment there. They can easily do market research, and from the list of no-code tools in the market, they can pick one and run with it. But there are, I guess, a different group of projects who have already spent a lot of time and resources in creation of these automation frameworks. They will have harder time making business case to switch from, to let go of their existing automated tests that they built, and then switch to a no-code platform and for the most part start from scratch. Even with them, factoring in the highly expensive development resources, architecture resources that are needed to be able to build these automation frameworks and then maintain them for however long the project is supposed to go, they will be able to make sort of an ROI model where they can provide a good analysis for their business team as to, you know, within a year, within 2 years, we will get to breakpoint, even though we have a sunk cost for what we have spent so far, but we will get there in a year or two, and then we will surpass, and we will have enough justifications to be able to move forward with a no-code platform. In terms of interlooping with DevOps, that is a much easier proposition, given that tools in the market either have existing plugins for DevOps tools or have enough APIs exposed for that type of integration. This also, however, is sort of a one-time task for the most part to be able to do that integration. So even if for that integration you will need to bring in your development team to make that integration, it is okay because it's a one-time task and you don't have to worry about it moving forward.
Yeah, that's always key, isn't it? Just having it there and then you can kind of move on. And it's interesting that you say there that there's challenges, but there's also a lot of results that kind of come from that. And I think to kind of help our listeners understand this a little bit better, do you have any case study examples or enterprises who have thrived off of using no-code, low-code automation platforms? Obviously, you don't have to name any names, but I feel like some use cases or case studies could help here.
Yes, we do have many. So most of our clients, whether on the government side or commercial front, they have used either, you know, various commercial tools or they have built their own, you know, frameworks internally. But over time, because of all of the issues that we talked about earlier, they have had nightmare in maintaining those automated tests. Also, because of the project turnover and resources coming and leaving the project, first of all, hiring folks and then teaching them how to use the specific tool or technology that they were using really have been, you know, daunting, and it has been a big, big challenge for our clients. But after successfully bringing on Subject 7 to the mix, given that it is a no-code automation platform and they could easily use their subject matter expert, their existing resources that they have on staff, they have been extremely successful in creation of as robust and complex of automated flows as teams with development background can.
Excellent. I think that's kind of a perfect example there. So thank you for sharing that with us, Payam. To wrap up the show here, I'm just kind of curious, as we look towards the future, we've been speaking about a lot of the what's happening now and all of these kind of great examples and what people can be doing. But from your perspective, where do you see the future of test automation heading?
So I guess where I see it's heading is that I believe more and more projects will abandon their in-house developed automation frameworks and will switch to a no-code automation platform. This approach just makes sense and is more advantageous economically to the project. I further see that more and more vendors are going to be rebranding and repurposing their automation products to cater more to business users and non-technical testers. These rebrands will be further enabled by artificial intelligence, machine learning, and natural language processing capabilities that are in the market or will be developed for this purpose in the marketplace.
Yeah, I could definitely see it kind of heading that way, and it'll be interesting to see if that does come to fruition. So we'll have to keep an eye out going forward. But all I can say, Payam, we've reached the end of our show here, and thank you for coming on, walking us through all of this. It's been really fascinating to kind of get your insight and for you to kind of lay out this groundwork for us. So thanks for coming on today's show.
Thank you very much, Max, for having me as your guest speaker today.
You're very welcome. And thank you everyone who took the time to listen to this episode. We hope you took a lot away. There's a lot of information that can be gained from this area of discussion and a lot of information to delve into. If you are looking for more information, then please head on over to subject-7.com. They've got some fantastic resources on there that kind of explain this a little bit better. As I was saying in the show, there's a great piece on pivoting to no-code test automation, which you should check out. And you'll be able to contact a member of the team for any help there. So again, that's subject-7.com.
You've been listening to the EM360 podcast. For more great content, head on over to em360tech.com.